grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing? Welcome to California Haunts Radio. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour or so. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of sunny Sacramento, California. It is sunny today. In case you have a paranormal need, you can get a hold of us. Or you think you have a paranormal need, you can get a hold of us. We're everywhere on the internet now. You can find us at TikTok. You name it. We're there. We're there. It might take us a while to get to you because California is a huge state, but we will get to you, and we'll get to you in the most prompt way we can. Tonight, my guest. We got a great guest. I'm excited. I love talking about shapeshifters, and I hope you do too. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things, and I know he has some new books out, or a new book out that you know, he'll want to talk about this stuff. But I'm going to let him introduce himself and everything because he's been on the show before, and we've always had a great time with him. So, quick couple of announcements. I will be on TikTok tonight at 7 p.m. Pacific to do tarot card readings for you. And join me over there under California Haunts. You can see the tether running beneath us. And what that tether is right now TikTok does not have coins available to people. So what people have been doing is they've been donating just through Cash App and things like that. So when you're on TikTok, and I know a lot of you are there listening, feel free to do that for now until they get the coin system up. There's still things that still aren't working over there. But anyway, enough about money and enough about that stuff. Happy, happy day. Let's get John Kachuba in here and let's talk to him and see what's happening with him. It's been a while since we've had him. Here we go. Hello, sir.
Yeah. Hello, Charlotte. How are
How
you?
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
It's great. It's great. It's just so fun to see you. I've been looking forward to this.
It's been quite some time since we've been on. So. Yeah. Good to see you.
Yeah, and I took like a month off because I was having internet issues and I was setting up stuff over for TikTok and all this. And so we're finally back on the air, fully functional. Good. So for the people that don't know you, tell us about you, sir.
Well, so I'm a writer primarily. I have 13 books out in print right now. And probably half of them have to do with the paranormal and by paranormal, primarily ghosts. Although I guess we're going to maybe be talking about shapeshifters tonight. My Shapeshifters, a History book came out in 2023. So just a couple years ago. And that was a Bram Stoker Award finalist in nonfiction. And it is nonfiction about shapeshifters. But I've been doing this now for quite some time. I've been investigating, you know, haunted locations and everything. For the last, probably about last 25 years or so, throughout the United States, as well as, countries abroad and all that. Uh-huh. And I'm coming to you from beautiful, sunny Cincinnati, Ohio. It is sunny, but it's freaking cold. We're down to single digits. It's just like crazy. But anyway, so that's me in a nutshell. You know, I get on these shows. I'm glad to be on your show. And I do a lot of these kinds of things. I do a lot of public appearances at libraries and universities and conferences and that kind of thing as well.
So. Along those lines, my father grew up in Cleveland.
And, okay. Well, I won't hold it against him.
When he would take us up to the snow line, right? You know, taking us up to Tahoe and stuff. He would say, "Look how pretty white this is." And my mom and I.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Isn't
right,
it pretty? Right. He'd go, "Well, give it a day." He said it'll become black snow. And so I have this beautiful Christmas village that I built and painted and all this. And I put snow on there.
Okay.
And he's been gone like 11 years now, right? Maybe more than that. And all the snow is turning brown. And I called my sister and I said, "I'm going to have to redo the snow." And she goes, "Why?" I said, "Because it's turning into Cleveland snow now." And she laughed. She says, "Oh my God, that's what Dad said." So yeah, so I remember all that stuff about the snow turning black.
That's the 2 or 3 day old snow.
The 2 or 3 day old.
We had a snowfall here. I guess it was last week. That was a record setting snowfall in Cincinnati. You know, Cleveland being on the lake, they get a ton of bad weather. We're way down in the Ohio River Valley, 4 hours away from Cleveland, almost five. So we don't get much snow. But this last snowstorm, we had 12 inches in one day, and it was just like unbelievable.
So, that's crazy. Right?
At least we have plows, unlike New Orleans and those areas.
Look at Florida. Yeah, Florida's
Florida. Yeah. I know.
6 inches of snow? Wow.
Oh, well.
We've never gotten that here at all.
Anyway.
So what got you interested in the shapeshifters?
Well, you know, as I said before, I do a lot of public speaking. And in the past, it had been primarily about ghosts because of I have five ghost books. By the way, you know, they're all on my website, which is johnkachuba.com. So people can see them there and pick them up. But what I noticed was that a lot of times I give these talks and invariably there'd be people in the audience who would have their own stories. And afterwards they say, you know, I got a ghost story to tell you. And frequently I would hear stories about some entity or something that they saw or heard about. And I'd say, boy, that doesn't really sound like a ghost. It sounds like something different. And I thought, you know, almost sounds like a shapeshifter, sort of the classical shapeshifter. So I just started wondering about the popularity, like, you know, why were so many people telling me stories about shapeshifters and that kind of thing. And I just started doing some research. And that's what sort of, it didn't switch me over completely, but that's what put me into a new avenue there, from ghosts to shapeshifters, you know. And what I found in my research was that almost every country in the world, almost any culture in the world, from ancient times to today, when I say ancient, I mean like prehistoric times, have had some shapeshifter character in like their folklore or their mythology or their religion, and not even just one, but sometimes, you know, many different ones. And they're out, you know, till today, to modern days, the shapeshifters, they're a very, very common and very, intriguing character.
Have you read that book that was written in the 1700s, 1800s by that priest?
I did.
You have?
Yeah.
It's funny because I saw this on Little House on the Prairie, of all places.
No kidding.
It was a Halloween episode of Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, wow.
And Mrs. Wilder was giving it to the kids to read this book. And I thought, oh, it's got to be a prop.
Oh, yeah. No, I try to remember the priest's name. His last name, I think, was Calmet, something like that.
Anglican.
He was French. He was a French Dominican priest.
Yeah.
And basically, he went through all of Europe investigating all kinds of paranormal stuff, werewolves, witches, vampires, ghosts, everything. But yeah, he was it was probably more like in the 1600s, I think. I can't remember the title. It's a very long title.
It goes way back.
Yeah. But I cite it in my shapeshifters book, and it was a good guide because it kind of gave me a little bit of, you know, historical look at how people thought about shapeshifters and also kind of placed them in some different areas. Because I actually was in like eight different countries to do research for the book. So I would go to places that had shapeshifter stories or history in that area and check it out, talk to people, get their take on their stories and everything else like that.
We actually read that book live on our Sunday show.
Which one?
Sundays. The Shapeshifters book.
Really?
Yep.
And what show was that you read at Sunday?
Live? I do a Sunday show where I read paranormal books, different paranormal books.
Some and you read true, it cover to cover.
Some are true, some are fun, you know, some are fantasy, but for the most part, they're true, you know, and that was the book. And, when I saw it on the show, I thought, well, it's a prop. So I get over to Gutenberg.org, you know, where they have all those books. And sure enough, there it was. And I thought, okay, I'll give it a try. That guy was sharp. That wrote that.
Well, I mean, he did a lot of research. He traveled, like I said, he traveled all around Europe, investigating cases. A lot of it had to do with werewolves and witches, particularly. But he did a lot of investigation into all that kind of stuff.
It's just amazing because of the way the beliefs were back then, you know, that this guy would actually have the smarts to go out there and do this without being ridiculed by others and stuff, you know, and called a witch himself because of it.
Right. Well, I mean, he wouldn't get ridiculed so much because there was this whole thing about, you know, the devil versus God. And of course, all these paranormal entities were the work of the devil, according to people in those days. So being a churchman, you know, he was a Dominican. His job was like he was, what would you call it? Like God's ambassador or God's protector in a way.
Yeah.
He was going after the bad guys, the demon guys, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So when you look at shapeshifting right now, what do you think, you know, as far as the modern age, what do you think is the most common shapeshifter that people report?
I think it's, from what I hear, primarily we're still talking about most of the shapeshifting sightings being either a werewolf or something in that category, like some kind of a canine, like for instance in the Southwest with some of the Native American tribes there, the Utes and the Dene people, you know, they frequently talk about shapeshifters that transform into coyotes or, you know, that kind of thing, sometimes wolves. So primarily canine, I guess, so as I'm talking about it. And I think the werewolf is still probably the number one shapeshifter that people think about when you say, you know, what comes to your mind when you say shapeshifter? I think most everybody immediately jumps to, oh, yeah, werewolf. Then vampire probably secondarily.
When you, because you just talked about that old book, about the way he was able to categorize these things. Is there a lot of difference between how we categorize them now as opposed to how he categorized them, you think?
Well, I think the big thing was, again, his, you know, his bias was that he was coming from a religious basis on this, right? So his classification was that there are all kinds of things, and there could be all kinds of things because of the work of the devil who could create these monsters, whatever they were, shapeshifters or whatever. Right? Well, we've come a long way, you know, from that. I don't think, at least when I've talked to people recently and did modern research, I don't hear sort of a religious bent there, you know. I don't hear people saying, oh, yeah, well, a werewolf must be the work of the devil. I mean, there might be people that believe that. But that's not what I'm hearing so much anymore. So I think that's the big thing, is moving the shapeshifters out of the realm of theology and just more into, I don't know what you want to call it, metaphysics, cryptozoology, you know, I don't know. Yeah. But kind of more a more human basis, I guess, is the way to look at it.
Okay, absolutely. So when you talk about, you know, people seeing like werewolves or whatever they want to call them, chupacabras, you know, whatever we're talking about. Where do you see, like in the United States, where do you see the most concentration of people seeing this stuff?
They're all over, and they really are. I mean, like I said, the Southwest, you know, is big for skinwalkers, which are types of shapeshifters, but up here in Ohio, you know, we've got something called the Ohio Grass Man, which is kind of like a Bigfoot. People think that maybe that's a shapeshifter. People think that the Bigfoot, Sasquatch, might be shapeshifters, and they're all through the West. Up in the upper Midwest, there's dog men, as they call them, which are weird critters, mostly with the head of a dog and a human body. And no one is sure if they're actually shape-shifting or if that's just how they are all the time. And Wendigos further up and going into Canada, you know. So, I mean, they're really all over America. Like I said, they're all over the world. And that was the one thing that surprised me when I started doing the research, was just the sheer number of shapeshifter characters around the world. I mean, just thousands. And I don't mean like, okay, you know, Japan's got, let's say, 500 werewolves. No, I mean, there might be a werewolf, but then there might be 400 other types of shapeshifters, you know? So, and that's true pretty much everywhere. It's just amazing.
The question in the chat room is, what about jaguars in South America?
Jaguars?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a jaguar is an animal. I'm not sure I get the question. They don't shapeshift. You know?
Are there beliefs that people may shapeshift in
oh yeah jaguars? Well yeah. Sure, okay, yeah. I mean, if you look at some of the indigenous cultures, you know, especially in South America and Africa, places like that, it's typical for a shaman to lead some kind of ritualistic, you know, practice and maybe help it along with some hallucinogenics from the environment, like, you know, magic mushrooms, those kinds of things, but it'll do it. And then, you know, frequently wear the pelt of an animal. So they could be wearing a jaguar pelt or something like that. And then through the idea of the trance and all the meditation and everything, you know, shift or believe they shift into that animal. So yeah, I mean, it certainly could be a jaguar, and again, just one of many that they could do
or become. Right. What makes people believe that something could be a shapeshifter? Do you think? I mean, is it because they witness it, or how's that work? Do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, sure. When people have an eyewitness account, you know, they're stunned, right? Because they really can't believe what they see, but they know what they saw. And there may be at some point, someday, an explanation, but they know that they saw a person change into something. I mean, in my book, I have a lot of reports from even like the last 30, 40 years or so of, you know, shape-shifting incidents in India, in the UK, in Africa, where people have sworn that they were there. They saw this happen. And, you know, like the one in India was about the Indian people called it a man wolf instead of what we would say a wolf man, but it sounded like a werewolf. And in this particular area of India, there were killings. Children were carried off and murdered. And this went on for over 2 years. Something like 100 kids disappeared. I mean, the New York Times wrote an article about it. And there was a reporter out there in India interviewing people who said, I saw this. I saw this thing snatch this little six-year-old kid, throw him over its shoulder, and then run off on two legs like a man, you know, yet being looking like a wolf. So, I mean, if you have the experience, you know, like what they say, you know, seeing is believing.
Right.
So I think so. But I also think there's something about the character generally that appeals to us because, you know, a shapeshifter is somebody that can say, you know what, I'm going to throw off everything that sort of constrains me, like my religion, the laws, my sense of morality. I'm going to get rid of all that stuff. I'm going to be a wild, crazy animal. I'm going to go out and howl at the moon and create mayhem, right? Well, in a lot of ways, that appeals to us as human beings because we do have that animal nature, right? And almost any one of us would say, boy, just for 10 minutes, if I could just go crazy and do what I want with no repercussions, some of us would do that. And some of us will get in trouble doing that, you know, but I think that appeal is what makes people either actually believe in shapeshifters or just really interested in them.
Okay.
When I talk about that, I mean, the quintessential story is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, right? Robert Louis Stevenson's novel, where you have this Dr. Jekyll, who is a Christian, moral, upright human being, cares about humanity, saves people's lives, and yet he has this little sort of, you know, I don't want you to call it a little itch that, again, what would it be like if I didn't have to be this kind of a decent guy? What can I do? What go crazy? And so he creates this potion that changes him into Mr. Hyde, who ends up killing somebody. He's a thoroughly despicable person and becomes so bad that Jekyll commits suicide later on because he can no longer control Hyde, who keeps coming out. Right. But that thing that is the basic kind of idea that I'm talking about, that we all think, you know, what if I could do what I wanted to do without any repercussions? And so the shapeshifter books and movies and, you know, all these kinds of things, all the popular culture about shapeshifters, dressing up, cosplay, even dressing up at Halloween. This is all shapeshifting. And it gives us like a safe outlet, you know, to sort of vicariously indulge in being a shapeshifter, where you know you're not hurting anybody, you're not hurting yourself, you know, you're not committing any crimes, you're not going to get locked up, but for a couple of minutes, you know, you're a shapeshifter.
How do we compare, like, okay, you know, the changes, how does somebody become, okay, first off, how does one become a shapeshifter? Do you have to be bitten? How does that work?
Well, you have to go to shapeshifter school. That's the first thing. And then, maybe not. Get your degree in shapeshifterology. You know, if you look at some of the folk tales and mythology and everything about shapeshifters, frequently becoming a shapeshifter was a curse, right? You didn't want that to happen, but like, especially like in Greek and Roman mythology, the gods and goddesses, I mean, every day they were taking some poor mortal and cursing them and changing them into something, you know? So you don't have much say in that. But later on, as we get into more, I don't know, I guess sort of the Middle Ages and even a little bit earlier than that, when you start getting people who are, how would I say it? I guess engaged in becoming like sorcerers and conjurers or witches or whatever, they begin to experiment more with taking that power that the gods used to have, which was the ability to transform. And so they started doing that through, you know, rituals and magic and all this kind of stuff. Again, whether they did or not is is debatable. But that's it. But it's interesting because there are people that have put together some theories that shapeshifters, you don't become one. You're born in, you are born as one. In other words, it's like a species in its own right. There's a writer named Stephen Graham Jones, who is a Native American writer. He's written a lot of horror novels, and he's written about vampires. And his vampires are, werewolves. And his werewolves are not cursed. They're not under the influence of, you know, a sorcerer or anything like that. They are simply werewolves. And at a certain time, they're human beings, and at a certain time in their life, they developed a werewolf ability to transform, and they can transform at will whenever they want to. So, you know, there are sort of, popular culture has shifted a little bit, where we're getting out of the idea of cursing and now getting to the fact where we can control our own destinies, because being a werewolf is something you just are. But you can't just necessarily go say, okay, I'm going to be a shapeshifter today.
Yeah. How does the research that you've done compare with what people see in the media and the movies?
Well, that's interesting. Because I think pop culture, and I think the movies, and especially probably movies and some of the novels, have kind of twisted some of the early lore about some of these shapeshifters and put a new spin to them. For instance, if you look at vampires, which again are considered, you know, shapeshifters, right? The typical vampire, at least in the maybe 50s and 60s and 40s, was like, you know, Bela Lugosi, Count Dracula, right? That kind of guy, right? A gaunt, mysterious kind of guy. Then you end up with the vampires, you know, from Twilight and some of these other things that are sexy and rich and wealthy and educated and articulate. And, you know, they're not anything like Count Dracula. But if you go back to the earliest vampire legends, the early vampires didn't even, you know, take blood. They didn't even hunt humans and take blood. And they didn't look anything like some kind of wasted, emaciated guy. Most of them were actually pretty corpulent. They were healthy and you know, ruddy and looking healthy, because they were living off the life force of human hosts, not blood, but life force. And it was more like a psychic thing than anything else. And those were the early vampires. And somewhere, somehow, maybe Bram Stoker had something to do with that, with Dracula. But then they became, you know, bloodsuckers.
Right.
And they weren't always that way.
And think of it this way. Somehow we got from Nosferatu to the Twilight vampires. Because Nosferatu is a scary-looking dude, boy.
Well, and that's much worse than Bela Lugosi as Dracula, right? I mean, that's about the creepiest vampire I've ever seen.
For a silent film, it's spooky. That's a spooky one.
I still love that movie. The silent movie, anyway. The original one.
Yeah, I love that movie. I could watch it over and over. But, I mean, plus I'm half Hungarian, so, I mean, that's my...
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, you'd like my trip to Romania then, because...
I would have loved it. Absolutely. You know. Absolutely.
Actually, the people, besides doing all the Dracula stuff, I spent some time with in a village up in Transylvania, which was Hungarian people up there. There's a lot of Hungarians in that part of Romania, you know. Got to know those folks too.
And my father, you know, I was only like 9 years old, 10 years old, you know, with his wicked sense of humor. You know, the house we're staying in is about 6 miles from Dracula's castle. That really made me feel good too as a kid.
So you were there.
Pop. Yeah. So we were there.
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, what do you think keeps these legends going? What do you think?
Well, again, I'll go back to what I said before about how I think we all have sort of this these feelings inside us, kind of these wishes, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I think it gives us a great outlet just to do it, to think, you know, wow, what, I mean, if you could shapeshift into anything that you wanted, mm-hmm. if you had that power, I mean, think about that. What would you do? And you could make yourself, you know, anything you want it to be. And so even sort of just basic psychology, if you're a person who always, you know, all your life you felt that, well, you weren't smart enough, you weren't mm-hmm. pretty enough, you weren't strong enough, whatever it was, the idea of the shapeshifter, where you can take this little personality that you think is not that good and change it into some kind of, you know, superhero or whatever you wanted, mm-hmm. how powerful is that, right? Mm-hmm. So, again, I think it's just something that we buy into psychologically. And I think as long as we continue to do that, the idea of becoming something other than what we are is always going to be appealing to people. And that's the shapeshifter. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are people, you know, willing to talk to you about this stuff? You know, like you say, oh, yeah, I write about this. You know, you go out, like me being a newspaper reporter. You saw a ghost, blah, 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 blah. So are people really open about this now?
Yeah, they are. I mean, the funny thing is, you mentioned ghosts. When I first started writing the ghost books, when I first started those, some of the programs were just coming on TV, like the Ghost Hunters, the original ones. You know, those are just now coming on TV. So because they were on TV, it opened up sort of ghost hunting and the paranormal to the world at large. Right. So people didn't feel, you know, stupid or embarrassed or anything about talking mm-hmm. about their experiences because, hey, it's on TV. They found it. Mm-hmm. So I found the same thing with shapeshifters, too. Although I don't think that stigma was there as much as it was with ghosts. Uh-huh. Because I think when you just hear sort of the number of stories about paranormal entities, uh-huh. I think what you hear about ghosts far outweighs, you know, even shapeshifters, as popular right. as they are. Right. So, you know, and a lot of people, I mean, in my books, I interviewed so many people who had experiences, ghostly experiences, uh-huh. and were no longer afraid to talk about it because, you know, TV helped kind of open up to the public. So
do you think, you know, like some of these shows, and my mind is like yellow right now, but, you know, of people talking about shapeshifters and shows has done the same thing.
I didn't hear the last part of that.
Do you think that, you know, people being so open now, even with shapeshifters, that's done the same thing so that people are more honest about, you know, hey, I think I saw this, or I know I saw this, you know, running through the woods? You know, because you've seen this stuff on TV.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. Yeah, sure. I think that helps again. You know, if it's in popular culture, by its very name, popular means mm-hmm. people are into it, right? Mm-hmm. So the more we hear about it, the more people are willing to talk about it. I do a lot of radio shows. I have a lot of call-ins. And mm-hmm. When I did, you know, if I'm talking about shapeshifters or ghosts, whatever, people will call in and they'll mm-hmm. say, well, I had this experience, you know, and I mean, I've had people send me emails after some of the programs, especially about shapeshifters, and tell me that they are shapeshifters, you know. It's,
interesting.
Okay. I don't know what to make of that. And like, you know, okay, congratulations. I don't know. But you know, they'll come and tell me and say, yeah, I'm a shapeshifter. I heard you on the radio. I said, okay, you're going to, I don't know what that.
Are there any stories that you've heard that have really stuck out in your mind?
From the people like that have said that?
Yeah. Or from the people you've interviewed that have seen them or whatever.
Yeah, there was one guy I talked about. I don't know if I can remember the whole thing. But again, remember I said earlier about being out west, like in the Southwest.
Right.
And that's where he said that, if I get the story right, that he thought he had transformed into, I think he said a coyote, if I'm not mistaken. Uh-huh. And then I said, well, how, you know, what, I mean, how did you feel? And he said, I don't know. I just had this, it was strange because he really couldn't articulate how that happened or why, but he said, I just had this feeling that my perception was different, that I was like in a different kind of perception than human, that was more like what an animal would see or do. And he felt that he was disoriented, like that he uh-huh. didn't really have a clear sense of sort of where he was or whatever. Uh-huh. To me, I mean, frankly, I don't know that tells me he transformed into anything. But I mean, this is his experience, you know. And I can't judge what he felt, you know, or that's up to him, but it didn't, it sounded very unusual.
What strikes you about all these cases? You know, the ones you've done research on, is there a lot of parallels, you know, with these cases, or do you see scattered, you know, information on them, or what?
Well, I think the answer to your question is both yes and no, because what I found was, for instance, let's take the werewolf as a type. Mm-hmm. You know, I collected stories from France and from Germany and from Romania and Hungary and those areas. So we're talking about different European countries, right? Mm-hmm. But yet the basic sort of history about them and what they do and how they act and how they behave and everything like that was very similar. If I was in France talking about a werewolf, and then I went to Germany or somewhere and talked about a werewolf, it's saying, well, this is what I heard in France. They'd say, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, same thing here. They knew that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you can go to some other, you know, further country, further out, like maybe to Africa or someplace, or someplace where there are still wolves, maybe even America. Mm-hmm. I don't know about werewolves here, but are they a little right. different because, you know, we're out of that European culture? I don't know. I mean, right. you got to remember that they're shapeshifters, which means they are at least human. And so they're coming from a certain human culture that's going to have similarities or dissimilarities. But then you get to places like Japan that has such weird, weird shapeshifters that I've never, they're not similar to anything. One kind of unique aspect of shapeshifters in Japan is that a lot of the shapeshifters are actually ghosts. So instead of just being human beings that shift into something, these are human beings who have died and are now ghosts, and the ghost then shapeshifts. And the ghosts frequently in the Japanese legends and stories will shapeshift into another person rather than an animal. And usually they'll come back, that shapeshifting ghost person will come back to generally get some revenge on, you know, a lover that jilted them or something along those lines. And once they've done that, they'll return back to the ghost form and probably not come back again. I don't know of any other culture that has that kind of a shapeshifter. You know, a dead person shapeshifting is what it is, which is it's pretty different.
Now, the question I have is, where do you think these stories come from? Are they, you know, is it dreaming for somebody? Or, you know, like you say, this could be physically happening. What do you think? Is it legends or what?
Well, I think there's legends. But again, I think, you know, every legend comes from our own brains. I mean, legends aren't hanging on a tree and you just go pick one off and say, let's look at this legend, right? We make them all. Right. And so I think, again, going back to the idea of what I think about shapeshifters sort of answering some kind of a need or desire that we all have as humans, that we make up legends that support that. But, you know, interestingly, as I said, they go way back, even before the time that we were writing legends or anything like that. The earliest evidence of a shapeshifter is a cave painting in France. And it's from the Neolithic period, so it's prehistoric. Mm-hmm. So before anybody was writing or even, you know, anything. And I had the picture in my book, I had the drawing of it, and the cave painting basically shows what looks like a human being. He's standing up. Well, let me back up. It looks like a deer or a stag of some kind standing up on its hind legs. But when you look at it closely, you'll notice that, and he's got the front legs are kind of raised up. If you look at him, you'll notice that they don't have hooves on the feet. There's toes. There's toes on all four legs at the end, on the feet. They have toes. Mm-hmm. Now, animals don't have toes like that. These are like human toes, right? And then when you look at the face, the head is kind of turned directly towards the front. You're seeing the animal in profile, but the head is turned. And if you look at the eyes are like ours. They're dead center. They're not bicameral. They're not on the sides like you would expect a deer or something to have, you know, further over. And it's got antlers. So people say, so what is this thing? Well, anthropologists say that is a depiction of a shaman transforming into a deer. So this, you know, it's what they call hunter magic, because the shaman would have gotten a bunch of the hunters from the tribe together, and they would have done some kind of a ritual, you know, chanting or drumming or whatever. Mm-hmm. While they're doing that, the shaman's painting this, you know, painting on the wall. And as I said before, they've probably ingested some kind of some hallucinogenic or something. And so they're probably wearing animal pelts. So next thing you know, they've become, and I put that in air quotes, they've become these animals. And so they can go out and hunt them because they can get closer to them. If you're hunting deer and you are a deer, you can get right up to the herd, right?
Right.
So, so again, so these are, so once you have that basis, I mean, the legends and stories just get passed down. Well, this is how you hunt. We all become deer. You know, okay. So you believe that.
So when you're doing your research, are you looking for comparisons between between societies and what they see, or is it a surprise for you to see if that there are comparisons? You know.
Yeah, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't really out there looking for that. I was just basically going to an area and saying, okay, I've heard that there's some, you know, shape-shifting legends from here, or some historical incidents that may have occurred. And so let me check it out. Let me see what's here. But not necessarily saying, oh, I want to compare this to what it's like in France or something. But as I gathered all these stories and gathered all this evidence and all this research, as I said, I did find similarities between a lot of cultures on some of these things.
Interesting. What do you think is the strongest similarity?
Well, I think probably the idea of shape-shifting into an animal. Now, that might sound like, you know, excuse me. That might sound like, well, yeah, let's take that for granted. But a true shape-shifter has the ability to shape-shift into anything. So it could be an animal, it could be another person, or it could be, even as in Japanese culture, it could be an inanimate object. So you can literally transform into a dustpan if you wanted to. I don't know why you'd want to, but you could. So I think the biggest commonality is probably that most of the shape-shifting is into some kind of an animal form.
Interesting. And do the shapeshifters, I mean, because there are animals, what about food? I mean, are they eating it? Are they eating, like, are they vegans? Are they eating meat? Or what are they eating? Because you would think there'd be, like, if somebody's a vegetarian and he shapeshifts into a werewolf, I mean, you know.
Well, I don't know what werewolves eat. I mean, that's an interesting question. But I would have to say that you're right. I mean, you know, wolves are not particularly thought of as vegetarians. So right. I'd imagine if you transform into one, you know, if you have transformed into an animal, you're an animal. So I would imagine even if you were a vegetarian as a human being and you change into a wolf, you would probably, you know, ditch the cabbage and go after the chickens. I don't know.
Okay. Have you been on any investigations to look for any of these things?
No, not investigations as such. I've been to places where shape-shifting events occurred. So, for instance, in France, I was in an area of France basically called Gévaudan, and there was something called the Beast of Gévaudan, which in the 18th century was this enormous kind of canine of some kind that ravaged villages throughout that area for about a period of 2 years and killed like over 100 villagers. And so I went to these villages, and a lot of them had little memorials set up in the town square to somebody that, you know, fought off the beast or some victims of the beast. There was even a museum in one of the towns that had sort of the history of the beast and some little pieces that they thought were evidence, like, I think, like, maybe a gun that was used by one of the hunters to go after him or anything. So that wasn't a hunt, but I mean, I was in the, you know, in the area on the ground where this beast had been. And the people that were living there today, obviously they had no firsthand experience of a creature that was running around there 200 years before they were born, but they had the stories. A lot of them passed down from their ancestors, you know, their parents, their grandparents, or great grandparents about the beast. So that was pretty interesting to do that.
question in the chat room is, have you seen or do you believe they exist?
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. So I have not seen a typical, you know, werewolf vampire transformation. I haven't seen, that'd be pretty unusual to see that. But in my book, I talk about two different types, sort of broad classes of shapeshifters. And one is an external shapeshifter, which is the typical werewolf, vampire, whatever, where you can actually see a physical transformation, right? A guy turning into a wolf. If you think of the movie American Werewolf in London, you know, if you see, I mean, that was an amazing transformation that they did in film, right? But that is an external shapeshifter. But I also make the case that there's something called an internal shapeshifter, where you don't see any exterior change. You don't see somebody physically change, but you know that there's something that happened to them mentally. And I'm not talking necessarily about being mentally ill. I mean, it could be. Maybe that kind of a shapeshifter is just somebody who's mentally ill. We're talking about somebody that becomes something other than what you would expect. So I think of somebody like Ted Bundy, you know, right? He was a serial killer. We all remember him. And what people said about him was that when you saw him, he was this clean-cut, American kind of collegiate-looking kid, young guy, very helpful to people. He'd help you put your groceries in the car. He'd escort little old ladies across the street. He was friendly, but he was a monster, right? I mean, he killed people, and yet that's not how he looked. But something inside him was saying, I'm a monster. And, you know, psychologists and psychiatrists could make a case for it and say it's mental illness. And I'd say, well, you know, maybe it is. But to me, that is still shape-shifting. Maybe it's not a voluntary thing. Uh-huh. You know, maybe it's you can't help it. Uh-huh. There was a guy in Ohio here. His name is Savelli. His name is Guy Savelli. The guy's name is Guy. Uh-huh. Guy Savelli. And Guy was a martial arts expert in a couple of different types of martial arts. And he gave a lot of training to Navy SEALs, to special ops guys, and that kind of stuff. But he also did a lot of mental kind of things. He was into remote viewing and all this. And he gave classes on sort of training, you know, mental skills and mental abilities. And one of his students, I got the story from a student, said that he and Guy were in a bar one time. And they were just sitting there having a beer or whatever. And some big dude comes over to them. They didn't know who he was. He didn't know them, but he was drunk. And he just started getting in Guy's face. Hey, buddy, get up. I want to pick you. I'm going to kick your, you know, whatever. I'm going to punch you up. So Guy stands up and he faces this guy. And the student is sitting there watching. He's in the chair watching. Oh, man, this is going to be terrible. It's going to be a big fight. But he says that all of a sudden he looks at Guy. And he says that he sees that Guy's face. He said, I don't know how to explain it. He said, but I wasn't looking at Guy Savelli anymore. I was looking at what looked like the face of a tiger. Wow. And he said the drunk just kind of went, his eyes went big, and he just kind of backed off. He said, oh, okay, man, okay. And he walked away. That was it. And then Guy sits down, and he's fine looking. And the student kind of said, what the heck, you know, and Guy said something like, oh, you saw that, huh? Well, so here's the thing where the student said, I can't say that he really changed. I mean, but somehow that image, that idea that he had become a tiger was there. And it was enough that the drunk looking at him eye to eye saw that too. But it wasn't really an external thing. You know, he didn't grow claws and he didn't get stripes and go around growling on all fours, you know? So that's kind of the internal thing I'm talking about too.
Interesting. Is it hard to do this research?
It's time consuming. I think any research is hard if you don't go about it the right way. So I try to find out as much as I can before I go into the field, you know, but I also think that it's important to be at the places where whatever it is you're researching, where it happened or where you can talk to people and get eyewitness accounts or historical artifacts or archives or whatever. So it's not as difficult as much as it's just time consuming and it requires a fair amount of organizational ability.
Are you aware, you know, because I know we talk about the vampires, you know, going down to, well, the bats, right? You know, they turn to the bats, they fly off. Are you aware of any other types of shapeshifters that will change into something that flies?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of them. There's something out of, I want to say, Central America, but I'm not sure exactly what, and I forgot what it's called in Spanish. But basically, it's a person that they change into a flying. This is really weird. It's almost like a bat, but when people say that they've seen it, they said it doesn't look like a bat. It looks more just like a head with wings. So, okay, there's that. There was a story I got from Africa where some villagers saw a flock of big black birds fly over the village. And they didn't think anything of it. It's Africa. There's a lot of birds. But these were big, more, you know, usual. And they were walking. The villagers are walking somewhere. And they found this woman sitting on the road, or the path or whatever. And she was an old woman, an elderly woman. And she was in pretty rough shape. Like, she was pretty exhausted and kind of beat up. So they went to her. And they said, well, you know, are you okay? What happened? And she said, yeah, I'm fine. She said, but I'm a witch, and I was flying back with my coven as a bird, and that somehow, she said, midair, I lost my abilities. She said, I'm old. I lost my abilities. And so she literally crashed to the ground. So, I mean, there's the shapeshifter story of, you know, going the reverse from some kind of a bird to a person. But yeah, there's a lot. It's unbelievable.
Which brings me to kind of think about the Mothman. Is the Mothman, I mean, do we think the Mothman is what he is, or could he be a shapeshifter?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't done a whole lot of research on him, but everything that I hear makes me think that he's more, you know, a cryptid of some kind, maybe.
Sure.
Or a lot of people think it's an alien of some type, but I don't, I haven't heard anything about him being a shapeshifter or it being a shapeshifter. Yeah. So I don't know about that.
Kind of makes me wonder. So should people fear these things?
I would imagine.
That's a stupid question. Yeah,
I mean, I would say if you were facing a werewolf, yeah, I'd be kind of afraid.
I mean, there's those stories of people driving, you know, and they look out the window and this thing is keeping pace with it.
Running alongside the car.
Alongside the car.
Yeah. I mean, I have to believe that anything like that can be a pretty terrifying event. Which is interesting, though, because, in some of the folklore that I found, you know, we tend to think that shapeshifters are all these evil, scary, you know, monsters, because we like that. We like the evil monster part.
Right.
But in some of the legends and folklore that I found, there are shapeshifters that are fine with people, that they're not evil. In fact, they're even helpful sometimes, like, you know, leaving food on your doorstep if you need food or something. Mm-hmm. So there's that, too. They don't get as much press as the bloodsuckers do.
But, right, yeah, right.
They're out there.
Mike in the chat says, alien in a human form. What do you think about that?
Oh, well, so there's the whole thing about reptilian alien shapeshifters, you know, which is David Icke's from England, who talked about them coming to Earth, some reptilian aliens coming to Earth like millions of years ago. And then mating with whatever kind of sort of proto-humans were running around on the planet at the time. And their DNA, their genetic material, passing on. So today, we have these shapeshifters that can shift from a reptilian form to a human form, according to his beliefs.
I have heard that from guests in the past about alien DNA being within us. That's what I have heard over the years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty common. I mean, I know he has something like, you know, a million people or something that subscribe to his newsletter, if not more. And that's certainly been the focus of some movies and novels and everything like that, too. So it's in the popular culture.
Is there any, like I know about the Beast of Bray Road, you know, that's a biggie. You know, like you say, the concentration is mainly in the West for these creatures. But is there a particular region where, I mean, like you look at California, you look at, you know, the NorCal California with Sasquatch, as far as like werewolves and things like that, is there any particular concentration area? do you think?
Yeah, they're all in Sacramento.
That's it.
Yeah, we're all.
I believe it.
No, I mean, again, like I said, I find shape-shifting stories everywhere, and I don't know the werewolves. I think particularly sort of evolved, legendary, and everything else in Europe. You know, primarily even Eastern Europe. Oh, and vampires. Although there's stories about vampires, even from ancient Egypt and Babylonia. So that's there too. But no, I think every region, every place in the world seems to have some shapeshifter lore, and it's probably unique to its area and its culture.
Because I even heard the Old West. I heard the Old West, they saw them as well.
The Old West?
Yeah, like you know, Tombstone and you know that era where they were seeing.
Oh, well, you know, yeah. I mean, they could have been talking about what Native Americans have talked about all this time, about skinwalkers or whatever. That could be.
One of my moderators says, I knew it was you. Yeah, it's me. Every night I change, yeah. That's why I don't sleep at night. I'm out moving around, scaring people. What do you like about doing this type of research?
Well, I'm a writer, and by being a writer, I just have a lot of curiosity about a whole lot of things, whether it's shapeshifters or werewolves or, you know, I don't know, butterflies, I don't know what. But anyway, you know, so what I like about it is that I have an independent lifestyle, you know.
Right.
I follow what I'm interested in. I get to do what I want to do. And I meet some, you know, fascinating people, and I go to some fascinating places. So, yeah, it's all good. Plus, I mean, I'm a writer. I love to write. So,
is there any consistent conditions for a shapeshifter to appear? Because I mean, you know, over the years from the movies and everything, it's always a full moon, you know, turn into a werewolf and all this. But I mean, does there have to be a certain condition for these things to appear?
You know where that full moon thing came from? It came from the Lon Chaney Wolfman movie in 1939, something like that. Yeah, there's a poem about when the moon is out or whatever, that's when he turns to werewolf. Prior to that, werewolves had absolutely no connection with the moon whatsoever in any culture. Okay. This was, I mean, whoever came up with that, I mean, it stuck, didn't it?
Right.
Because now you always say, oh yeah, full moons, werewolves.
Right.
Prior to that time, it wasn't there. So I guess the answer is I don't know for sure if there has to be pre-existing conditions. The moon thing was just made up for the movie.
Right.
But I mean, there may be some conditions that are more conducive maybe for a shapeshifter to transform. I don't know.
Well, I mean, like you talked about earlier, we talked, you know, you glanced over history of movies, you know, getting into the Twilight Saga, you know, where you got not only got the vampires in there, you've also got the werewolves in there.
Yeah.
And right. But you kind of lit on, I mean, she did some research on this stuff because the werewolves, of course, ran in families, you know, within the Native American tribes. But I mean, but like you say, it's gone through this change to where they're glamorous. These things are glamorous.
Oh, yeah.
These vampires are glamorous.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
They weren't before. Now, I've had vampires call me to be on the show in the past.
And I'm not surprised.
People that claim that they're werewolves, you know.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to talk with these people because I know Sacramento, and this is Sacramento has a, I'm not saying underlying thing, cause I don't want to get in trouble with somebody showing up my house, like, you know, flying through my windows and stuff. But we do have a big population of people that believe that they're vampires or they're into that sort of thing.
In Sacramento?
Yeah, in Sacramento, yeah.
Yeah.
In this area.
I know there's folks in New Orleans and actually in upstate New York. I think it's not Buffalo. I forgot what it was, but yeah, and they don't call themselves vampires. They call them, at least in these cultures, they call themselves sanguinarians.
Yes. Yeah.
But they do maintain that they need to ingest human blood, you know, for their own health and their own well-being. Uh-huh. But you know, it's so different, right? Because at least with those two groups that I'm talking about,
right?
Blood donating is voluntary, and they don't go out preying on people.
Right.
And it's done in very hygienic, sanitary, medical conditions, just as if you're, you know, donating blood at a Red Cross shelter or something.
So what do you see coming for you for next? What's on your agenda?
Well, I'm actually kind of switching gears again a little bit. 2 years ago, I co-authored a book with my cousin, and it's a novel. It's historical fiction with fantasy elements, and it's called The Bottle Conjurer. And it's a trilogy. And the second one is coming out this spring, but it does have in it shapeshifters and conjurers and stuff like that. So it's not anything based on, well, it is based on research, but it's not nonfiction. It's a novel. It's a trilogy. But we're pretty happy with it. It's our, the first one is on Amazon now, The Bottle Conjurer. But the second one will be out in the spring, and then the third one will be out, I don't know, maybe 2026, a little bit of luck. But yeah, so I'm doing some of that, doing a little bit of middle grade books for kids, paranormal stuff. And still, you know, still out speaking and coming out programs like yours.
What do you think keeps people interested in this stuff?
Me.
No. Yeah, well, besides that, obviously.
I don't know. I think again, you know, anything paranormal, it's mysterious, it's the unknown, and I think we're all just, you know, curious about that kind of stuff. We all like to, I'll say, dabble a little bit with the unknown, especially if it's got a little bit of creepy element to it. Because we always like to sort of push the fear factor a little. I mean, there was a show on TV called Fear Factor, you know?
Right.
How many spiders can you put in your mouth before you, you know, freak out? You know, I don't know. So those kinds of things. But, yeah, so I just think that's part of it. Maybe it's the same kind of curiosity that, you know, people do when they shoot rockets off to the moon and, you know, whatever. It's like, what's out there? What is this about?
So I always ask this question at the end. Maybe I haven't done it for you yet. Who knows? You're on the strip in Las Vegas. You're standing there. There's some bookstores out there. You know, some other authors who are writing on similar topics. How do you get people to come in to read your books?
I pay them. Pay them, offer them with scotch. Well, it's funny you say that because there's a conference in Las Vegas in June that I'm going to, and it's the Historical Novel Society. So I will be doing it. No, it's tough. I mean, I do a lot of book expos, book, you know, conventions, whatever they're called, book fairs, where, yeah, I mean, you might be with 100 different writers. It's hard because people walk by, you get maybe just a couple of seconds to give them a quick pitch like, hey, you know, whatever. Well, for The Bottle Conjurer, for instance, I got a little gimmick. I have a wine bottle. The title is The Bottle Conjurer. I have a wine bottle. And the premise behind The Bottle Conjurer is whether it's possible for a conjurer, a sorcerer, whatever you want to call him, to put himself into a wine bottle. Okay. Well, right away, we all say, no, of course. But so anyway, so I have this bottle. And so if somebody walks by, I'll say, hey, wait a minute. I'll say, can you see this bottle? Yeah. Come here. Can you put your finger in it? Yeah, sure. I'll put my finger in it. So I'll do that. Put his finger in the bottle. Right? I can do that. Okay. Can you put your hand in there? No. Can you put your whole body in there? Are you crazy? What are you talking about? Well, somebody, and then I can go and talk about the book. Well, in this book, The Bottle Conjurer. So, I mean, that's how you do it. You have to have a pitch. I mean, I know a lot of writers that have some visual things on their table or whatever that'll, you know, light up or whatever. But the best thing is to be able to talk about your book and have a story. Like, why should you read this thing? There's 200 other books you can buy here. Why should you buy mine?
Right. Absolutely.
And well, here's your scotch and soda.
It is always fun to have you on. It's always
thank you, Charlotte.
Love to get you back on when you're ready with your other books, okay?
Sure.
Love to get you back on. It's always a blast. Mm-hmm. Learned so much from you. Audience loved it. Had lots of participation tonight. Thank you so much, John.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
All right. You have a great rest of your evening. We're going to get you back on, okay?
All right. I'll be here.
I promise.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, John. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Maybe. Is it going? Where'd it go? New buttons to push. Okay. All right, guys, that's always fun to have him on. Love having him on. Tomorrow, another old friend of ours is going to come by. Barry Strome is going to come by with his special channeling board. And what a lot of people don't realize right now is Elvis Presley, this is his 90th birthday month. And so I thought it would be kind of fun to have Barry come on and channel Elvis, and the audience can ask Elvis some questions. How's that sound? So that'll be tomorrow night, 5:30 p.m. Pacific, right here again. If you want to join me, I'm going to be leaving here. And after I get done here, I'm going to be heading over to TikTok for California Haunts TikTok, where I will be doing a 3-card tarot card readings. You get to hear about your past, your present, and your future. And come on over. The readings are free. We have a good time. We chit-chat. We talk about the paranormal. We do all kinds of things. I want to thank everybody who joined me tonight in the chat room. Mike, I've got Jennifer. If I forget anybody, I'm sorry. Mike, Jennifer, Lori, Marisa. Yeah. So and Pamela. I didn't want to forget anybody. So thank you guys for coming into the chat room tonight and adding to the discussion. That's what we have. I don't have my backdrop up. I almost did today. Because what is the theme of this show? Come join the conversation, right? That's what it's all about, is input from you guys as well. All right? So I will see you guys in about, for those of you that come on over to TikTok, I will see you guys in about a half hour over at TikTok so we can start doing some really fun readings. Otherwise, tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, join me here for Barry Strome, and we're going to be talking to Elvis. All right? See you guys tomorrow, or later on today or tomorrow. And have a great night. Bye-bye.